Hey guys, before we get into the episode, you all know I'm a huge fan of fashion, and I have been ever since I was a little girl. And my first job, by the way, was actually at Macy's. And my love for fashion began when I started there because I worked in the fragrance department, but of course, my eye was always on the clothes and the makeup and everything related to style. But here's the thing, my relationship with Macy's didn't end once my days of asking people walking by if they wanted to sample the latest scents came to an end. Nearly 20 years later, I still find myself choosing Macy's time and time again for literally everything. It's become a really beautiful full circle moment that they've been such amazing supporters of our show for so long. And when it comes to shopping, they have everything you need. Whether I need a last minute outfit or Kevin needs a last minute outfit for our friend's wedding, we always head to Macy's. They've got us covered. So if you're in need of some retail therapy, perhaps, or looking to spruce up your home or your lifestyle, check out Macy's, friends. I've curated a list of some of my favorite items that have helped me upgrade so many parts of my life, really my fashion the most, but of course, home and baby and so much more. So check the link in the description and happy shopping, Heal Squad. I remember my mom always struggling with her hair. It's frizzy, Maria, my mom would say in her Greek accent. Tí eches, what do you have? I tried so hard to find her products. I wish I could share these products I'm using now with her because I know she would be so happy to finally have good hair days. I've always believed that hair is a woman's best accessory. And with Way's new anti-frizz cream, you can ensure that your hair always looks its best without the frizz stealing the spotlight. It's a lightweight cream that not only provides immediate frizz control, but also helps prevent heat damage. And get this, it lasts up to 72 hours. That's 3 whole days of frizz-free, gorgeous hair. Way seriously has some of my favorite products for taming the frizz. Pro tip, one of my biggest discoveries is using the Way hair oil on the ends of my hair before I dry it. Let me tell you, it's a game changer. Once it's dry, my hair looks so smooth and polished, I don't even need to do anything else. It is incredible. I love it. Frizz-free, up your schedule with Way. Go to the Way, theouai.com, and enter the promo code Heal Squad for 15% off any product. That's the Way, theouai.com, promo code Heal Squad. Trust me, you won't regret it.
Hey everyone, we are so inspired doing this podcast every week. Having the opportunity to bring you all the valuable knowledge and advice that each and every guest provides means the world to us. Now, because of how much positive feedback we've been receiving from our listeners, we've decided to build a community through Patreon. Members of Patreon receive exclusive access to a chat forum, the ability to interact with our guests, which is so cool, extra videos and podcast episodes that will provide even more advice and knowledge. Join now by going to patreon.com/bettertogetherwithmaria, and let's be better together, because when you know better, you get better.
I'm on a journey to get better, and I want to do it with you. And I'm not just focusing on physical health. I'm focusing on everything: emotional wellness, spirituality, finances, relationships, and so much more. Every week, it will be my personal goal to bring us, the world's leading healers, experts, and game changers, to share groundbreaking secrets and tips to getting better in all areas of life. Getting better isn't easy, but it's a whole lot easier when we can do it together. Welcome to Better Together with me, Maria Menounos. Hello, hello, everybody. Happy Monday. It's nice being back here on a Monday.
It is.
In studio, live. Hello, everyone on YouTube. This is where we try to learn. Because when you know better, you get better.
Yes.
And our quote of the day comes from our guest today, who I'm so excited about. To truly understand what it is to be in the light, you have to also understand what it is to be in the shadow. Because it's one thing to hold the light within myself, but how can I hold the space for another being when they are in the shadow and still love them and not judge them? I am only going to judge them if I am still judging me. And that is from Sean Corn, the internationally acclaimed yoga teacher and public speaker. She wrote an incredible book called Revolution of the Soul, Awaken to Love Through Raw Truth, Radical Healing, and Conscious Action. She is a very relatable story of someone who found yoga, who was not, you know, the typical yoga person, And I really loved reading this book. I don't know if I fully understand the quote. Do you fully understand the quote, Steph?
I think it has a lot to do with what we're going to ask her, which is if you don't do the self-work, you can't have prospering relationships, and you're going to judge them and you're still judging yourself. But if you do the work and you stop judging yourself, you can look at people more wholeheartedly and be just a better friend or companion or person. That's what I took away from
cool,
it.
Cool. So I'm just stupid.
No.
I'm kidding. That was really eloquent. No, because it says, because it's one thing to hold the light within myself, but how can I hold the space for another being when they are in the shadow and still love them? Like basically when they're in their shit, right? And when they're in a place where you would normally judge them because you're all enlightened and they're not, right? How do you still love them and not judge them? I am only going to judge them if I am still judging me. Ah, yeah. Now I get it. Sometimes you get to read things a couple of times.
So many of the quotes, Maria and I had a lot of the same quotes highlighted. I had to reread, but once you get them, you're
yeah.
like, oh.
This is good.
That's good.
Well, it's like, lest ye judge yourself. Is that a song?
No, it's. I think that's a Bible verse.
Yeah, it is, but it was in like a Guns N' Roses song, I think.
I'm gonna look this up right
now. Lest ye judge yourself. I don't know, guys. I swear I'm not on drugs right now.
I know you had a late night.
I had a late night. Not super late. I went to the Golden Globes parties last night. And I mean, I think I got home around 1 a.m.-ish, 1:30.
Oh, that's earlier than I thought.
Yeah, guys, I had McDonald's last night.
Talk about it.
Not
what
good. Not good. Well, it was a very busy day. I was reading the book. I had a really nice time. I sat outside by the water fountain and was reading Sean's book and just being so inspired and feeling so good. And then my mom, I had scheduled an EMDR session with Tammy Valicenti, who was on the show a few weeks ago. Because I realized that tapping might be a solution for her, because I feel like one of the things prohibiting her from full healing is her emotional baggage, which we talk about all the time. And I've tried with different spiritual counselors and stuff, but there was still stuff there. So I was like, let's try EMDR. The problem is my mom's not technically savvy. She has to do it over Facebook. So I have to be there. And so I said, Mom, I will not listen. Not that she cares. She's very like open with me. I'm like, I'm not going to listen. I'm going to be reading my book. I'll be there just for technical reasons. Or if you need something translated or you need to understand something better. Okay, Maria. So there I am on the couch. Oh boy. And I had gone through and written a list of traumas that she's experienced in life. And I said, Mom, which one of these, now that we have the list, weighs heaviest on your heart? And she said, losing her first baby. So I was like, okay, that's what we'll focus on in the session today. So there I am. I'm reading Sean's book and I'm stuck on the same page. And I'll share the page I was stuck on because it was kind of interesting, because I feel like part of this was meant for me as well. You know, there are no accidents, right?
Right.
And so my mom is talking about how she's 23. Doesn't speak English. She's in the hospital. The night before, she was so happy because the baby was dancing in her belly. And spoiler alert, this is a horrible story. So if like you have any triggers, if you've lost a baby and this is going to trigger you, I'm telling you now, this is like a really brutal story. So the baby, she's like, the baby Maria was dancing in my belly. I was so happy. And I, you know, she was feeling so good and she was on her side. And so she laid on her back and the baby stopped. And she went to the hospital after at some point. And it's Christmas Day. And they find out the umbilical cord strangled her.
Oh my.
Christmas Day. Christmas she's supposed Day. To like deliver. And the baby's coming out dead. And she's all alone. She doesn't speak English. She's only 23. My dad is outside. They probably already told him. He's emotional and freaking out probably and not understanding what the hell's happening either. And they wouldn't let her see the baby. because the doctor said, I don't want that to be the last image in your mind. And she's like, but I want a closure. And she's still haunted by this. And so I'm sitting there and I'm trying to read and I'm reading the same lines. And it was so crazy because it was the whole thing about little girls and
when you're on the go 24/7 like me, guys, finding ways to make life easier is so important for my health and sanity. And that's exactly what my friends at Macy's do for me. From working there as a teenager to now going to them for so many of my daily essentials, it's been my go-to for so many years. And having everything in one place is such a time saver for me. With being a first-time mom for a while now, as you know, I've had plenty of those, and being able to rely on them for all the things has been amazing. Plus, having everything in one place has made being a new mom just a little bit easier for me. So I know we're all focusing on our families, our health, hopefully, our jobs, and everything in between, but it's time to make your life a little easier. And to help you out, I've curated all of my essentials from Macy's for you and the whole fam. All the details are in the show notes below, or you can just click the link in the description to get your hands on them too. I have some new picks on there. This little bomber jacket, this little black dress. You're gonna love it.
It was a little girl that she lost. I'm trying to find the page here. Let's see here. Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
That is a brutal story.
It was. So I'm sitting there. I'm crying. My mom has her eyes closed. I'm crying. My heart feels like an elephant is stepping on it. Because also I'm just thinking, like, here's this other life. Like, I was supposed to have an older sister. And I know, like, you know, when you're not thinking about it, it's like, oh, it never happened, whatever. But when you hear the story, and I just was like praying up to her. I was like, please help. Help your mom, like help her get past this. It was really emotional, really, really hard. And so then I had a friend in need at the same time. And so I was like going back and forth between, you know, trying to help a friend and dealing with what I was dealing with my mom. And she did feel better after. And I haven't talked to her today about it specifically. But it was like, it was an intense day. So I never got to eat dinner. This is part of my Golden Globe story. So here we go. Oh, continuing on the story before we get stuck in the sadness. And I didn't eat and I had to get ready for Golden Globes. And by the time I went out, I was so hungry. And I had a couple of cookies or whatever at the like parties, whatever. And my friend was super depressed after what had gone on in his life. So I was like, let's just go to McDonald's. Let's just get happy. So we went. I had a quarter pounder with cheese, some french fries. They weren't salted, so I didn't eat many of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. They were not good McDonald's fries.
I guess that's a blessing in disguise, but...
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of really offensive.
It was, truly. But yeah, it was funny. We went to the Warner Brothers install party. And I saw Paris Hilton there. She looked great and she was so fun. She was so cute. I'm going to see her and some friends tonight in Vegas at the CES Consumer Electronics Show, where I'm speaking about digital health on the Rally Health panel, which is exciting. Katie Kirk will be joining me for that. And what else? Then we went to the WME party, my agency party. By the time we went to everything, we were so late. But yeah, I got a couple hours in. But I will say it was an exciting morning for us because last week I realized how much of a toll caretaking is taking on all of us, my dad especially, and then me. Because what people don't realize is, yes, it's a lot to take care of somebody. You have to like help them get dressed and brush their teeth and, you know, help them to the bathroom and all these things, right? When they're in the situation that my mom's in, when it's at that place. Okay, fine. All those things are hard. And having to watch her like a hawk 24/7, because if she gets up and she starts walking on her own, she falls, then, you know, we have other problems. So finally, I think it was Friday at 4 o'clock, I was like, that is it. I need to get a caretaker in here. We need help. Because I've also, time goes by kind of quickly, and you keep thinking, or at least I kept thinking, she's going to get better. She's going to get stronger. She's going to be able to walk normally like she did before. And that hasn't happened yet. Part of that is hopefully because the treatment has created inflammation in her brain. Hopefully it's not tumor growth of any kind. We'll know this week. We're going in. Well, we really won't know, but she's getting another MRI on Wednesday. Hopefully we see the radical remission I keep praying for.
Yes.
But I just realized, I'm like, you know what? We're all going to get sick taking care of her. And I talk to people about this all the time. I was like, practice what you preach. And the cool thing is, again, when I say, when you help people, you end up helping yourself. One of the patients I've been helping over the last 2 years, almost now, he's got the same thing my mom has. His wife and I have been communicating all this time, and I've been sharing and helping and giving tips. Well, now I'm in the place where she's giving me tips. And because her husband's on a certain medication that my mom is now on. So she was like, get your mom on, you know, grapeseed extract and bladder or kidney vitamins and things like that to counter the effects. And she's in the medical community, so she's done her research. And so it's like, we kind of like divvy up duties. Like, she researches certain things, I research certain things. And anyhow, she had already looked into caregivers. And she said, there's a really great company near you that I couldn't use because of my location. And I looked at the two companies she gave me. And one, I kind of got like a, ugh, like I didn't feel right about it. And the one that was near me, I felt really good about. Resonance and Dissonance, as yes. Susie Batiste has taught us on the show. If you haven't listened to her episode, it's amazing.
We'll put it in the summary.
And just get past our funny shit talk. I had the owners of the company. They came over. I called, and it was the owner of the company that answered. And she immediately made me feel comfortable and good. And I said, we need help. And she's like, well, when do you want to meet? I go, now. So they were at my house the next morning. And we met them. And they were so great. And they sent us this woman they've been working with for years. And she's here right now.
No way.
And she's amazing.
I'd love to meet.
Max loves her.
No way.
Loves her. I mean, we properly introduced her. He had amazing treats that she gave him. But I already saw his energy. And her energy is incredible. And you know, my mom said, oh, this is so wild. She had gone upstairs for a second. And my mom, I go, Mom, isn't she amazing? Isn't she really nice? And she goes, Maria, she reminds me of my mother.
No.
And I said, Mom, maybe it is your mom's spirit coming back to help you. You know, I said, when you're sick, you always want your mom. I said, you don't hear me, but when I'm sick, I'm screaming for you. Like, Mom, I want my mom. Yeah. We all just want our mom when we're sick. And so it was kind of interesting.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Let's just go with that.
I mean, I am. Yeah. Trust me. My dad was able to go to his doctor's appointment this morning and feel comfortable and safe that she's in good hands. Kevin has had a pinch hit and babysit for my mom while we're off doing what we have to do. Like, if he's got a doctor's appointment and I've got stuff, shows or whatever, Kevin's amazing. He'll just sit with my mom. But like, we have to like continue living our lives and then enjoying her. And we weren't enjoying her as much as I think we could. And so for anybody who is taking care of someone, there's something everyone needs to know. And this caretaking company taught me about it. Excuse me as
I did find the quote in the meantime while you look.
What is it?
Judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what message ye meet, it shall be measured to you again.
Oh, judge not, lest ye be judged yourself. Yes. That was in the Guns N' Roses song, I think. So they like took that, and thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, so here's something that you all need to research immediately. It's called long-term care insurance. And Steph, I think aside from going after Esther Hicks right now, your next mission
is to look into any information you can get on long-term care insurance so that we can share with everybody.
Yeah.
Because they told me about this. Because home care is very expensive. And we are going to have a caretaking crisis in this country in the next 10 years with Alzheimer's rates exploding. If you have parents and they're aging, you need to get this insurance immediately. I don't know what it entails, but when you get to a place and your parents are sick and they need at-home care and you now have to give up your life and your forward progress to take care of them, I know there are people who do it and they do it with all their heart, and that's something they're built to do. We're not all built to do that. And, you know, just like I'm not built to be my own mechanic, right? My car needs fixing. I can't do it. It's not my thing. So I have a great mechanic. it's really something we should all be looking into and getting. And the more information we can get to share with everybody, the better. But one of the things that I've wanted to do with this health show that I'm producing is Effect for Healthcare Change. And I wanted to work with the insurance companies to make it an additive. So it's just paying a little extra a month. And you know, you have that safety of if something happens. Like, for example, Alyssa, my best friend, her dad fell and broke his femur, I think, or some part of his leg. I can't remember right now. Okay. He can't move. He's 6 foot plus, 200 something pounds, huge man, and he can't put even an ounce of weight on his leg. So now they're having to wait on him completely. I mean, it's like an intense situation, right? She broke her wrist a few months ago. She's still healing and out of work. Now the mom fell and broke her wrist. The three of them are all broken. Alyssa's the most healed of them all. So now she's having to take care of everybody. And I said, and this is just broken bones, guys. This isn't cancer and all the horrific things that everyone's having to deal with, but it's still a thing. They still need to be taken care of. So if you have this insurance, you can have somebody come do what they're great at. And now you can just pinch hit and, you know, do what you do best. And that's what I was telling my mom. I said, Mom, we want to enjoy our time with you. I don't want to be ordering you around, do this, fix that, let's get your shoe on, whatever. I'm like, we're all going to get sick. And it's a lot. And I need someone to, you know, sometimes you need a stranger, right? Like the people that are closest to you, you don't want to listen to. So she'll get a little stubborn with us. And so I was like, she'll be able to get you on the treadmill. You know, I put her on my Peloton the other day at the lowest speed and I stood behind her and I attached the little unit to her. So if she was to fall, it would shut immediately, but I was behind her anyway. And we did 3 minutes, 37 seconds, which is probably the longest walk she's had in a long time. And I said, okay, this is what she's going to do with you every day. And you're going to build and build, and we're going to start building your strength up, you know?
That's so cool.
Yeah, so I'm filled with hope now.
Yes.
Because someone's here to help and someone's here to do.
All right, friends, let's talk about something we all do. Snack. Trust me, I've definitely overindulged in the past, but as you know, I am focused on my health these days, and I think I found the healthier snack that you don't have to lose out on the flavor, and it's definitely become my go-to. It first came into the house because of Kevin. He was obsessed with Wonderful Pistachios, and then I got addicted, and now it's in my travel bag. I don't leave home without it. It's in our glove compartments because they don't melt. Right now, my favorite flavor is the sweet chili flavor. It feels like some of the naughtier kind of snacks I used to use, where I used to lick my fingers after. Now I lick them and I feel safer. Plus, Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. That's crazy, guys. So if you're looking for the perfect snack, trust me and head over to www.wonderfulpistachios.com to snag a bag of Wonderful Pistachios. You're gonna love them. Some of this stuff, I'm going to get her at-home physical therapy, at-home occupational therapy, because when you're not mobile, they will send you somebody to the house. So I'm going to work on that this week.
Oh, good.
And so I went from like hopeless and just so tired and sad. And that's what it is. What people don't realize, and I was saying this earlier, is, and I lost my train of thought, taking care of someone is one thing, but then when you're emotionally tied to them and it's your mom, and your mom was so able and so fierce, and now she's just not, and she's a shell of who she was, it's so much harder and it takes so much more out of you, and it, because it's depressing. So my dad and I will be triple tired after our duties with her because we just are so sad to see her in this state, right? Because like I took her to get our nails done the other day. I literally came home and couldn't get to my bed fast enough. And it was
just a draining outing.
1 o'clock. I couldn't even keep my eyes open. I was cooked. And so it's just so sad.
But I think this will be perfect because, like you said, you couldn't enjoy your time with her.
Yeah.
So instead of doing like a really tiresome task, you could just be like, let's watch a show. Or
yeah. Or when I'm taking her to get her nails done, I have somebody to help me. You know, she's heavy and it's hard to move her and to like, I have to park the car. I have to get her out of the car sometimes because the spaces are so tight. Right. We just got the handicap placard, but like the nail salon the nail salon that we go to doesn't have like a handicap spot. Right. So I had to get her out, put her in the spot next to the car, beg her not to move. And you have to pray that she doesn't move. I'm like, mom, please don't move. And I had the walker there. I'm like, please don't move. Please don't move. And you're just shaking until like you park the car and make sure you get out and that she's okay. Because
she will go.
She will go. As you know, Steph, you caught her once. Getting on the highway on foot.
I'm so glad you did that, though. And I can't wait to research this long-term care insurance, which is what I love. One of the favorite things I do that we do here is I love when we bring this type of information because no one knows.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known either. And you know, how old are your parents, Steph?
My dad's 61 and my mom's 57.
Got it.
Yeah.
So your parents are getting older.
Yeah.
You know, they're still young.
And they, but, yeah.
But they also work incredibly hard and they have emotionally like arduous jobs.
Yeah.
And so they are really susceptible to getting sick.
I know. My mom's the one I'm the most worried about because she works harder than anyone I know.
And she internalizes everything. So.
Yeah.
Would not be a bad idea
to get
this little insurance and you know you're safe and that they'll be taken care of. So that is my biggest tip for the day. In the meantime, we are going to chat with Sean now. She's got such a crazy, amazing story. You know, she went from abusing drugs and alcohol, suffering from anxiety and OCD, to now being an internationally celebrated yoga teacher and a spiritual activist. She is spearheading a revolution of the soul, which I love. She's been endorsed by the likes of Sally Field, Naomi Watts, Gabby Bernstein, Marianne Williamson, Larry David, so many more. When you read this book, you start to see quotes from like congressmen to celebrities. It's like nonstop.
I've never seen anything like it. For someone, because a lot of like Larry David, that's surprising that he's not like, this is frou-frou for me, you know?
Yeah. Oh, he was into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to get him to actually read a book, and you could tell he did. And to write a quote is not easy, I would imagine. I don't know from personal experience.
Yeah.
Today, she's going to talk to us about this book and the revolution of the soul, as well as her teachings that will help heal, evolve, and change the world. You are going to love this book. It's literally been what I've been talking about for the last 2 or 3 days with people. You're going to love this. Oh, my God. It's so amazing.
Me too.
So without further ado, here is Sean Korn.
Hey everyone, it's Kelsey.
And Jeff, and we are here to tell you a bit about our partner, Anchor. We know that you're a fan of this podcast, and maybe you thought, hey, I want to make a podcast too.
Well, we have great news for you guys. We want to tell you all about Anchor. It's the easiest way to make a podcast for a few reasons, but to start out, it's free.
Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer.
Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many more.
Plus, you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership.
It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place.
So download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Do it, you guys, and enjoy the show.
Oh my God. Okay, wait. So Sean and I are having a discussion off the air that now I'm like, wait, we have to have this on the air. Like, we just have to start here. Because we were talking about your dad having kidney cancer and my mom having brain cancer. You lost your dad. Mm-hmm. They gave him how many months?
4.
And he lived 7 years. Yeah. Were you taking care of him?
My mother was taking care of him. But what I would do was, so I'm on the road traveling for work. And so I would teach on a weekend, finish on a Sunday, go home to Jersey, be there for 5 days, get back on a plane, and then go to my next gig for work. And when I was home with him, my brothers and I took on very different roles, as I'm sure you know within family. You know, there's certain things that I could handle that they couldn't, and vice versa. And for whatever reason, I could handle the gross, gritty stuff of hospitals and just the blood, the puke, the shit, all the stuff that goes along with cancer when you're in that level of treatment.
Yeah.
And so, but my mother was the primary caregiver, and it was just, it's just rough. It's intense.
It really, really is. Mm-hmm. I've had to do things that I can't unsee or undo that are, I would never in a billion years think, and I don't mean just changing like pants. I mean, that. Bathroom stuff. Like, it's even crazy. You're just like, you just have to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
They need help. You have to do it. That's it. Mm-hmm. But you were saying something that was really profound that your dad said to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when he got diagnosed, of course, my father was a yoga teacher, but he was also a very, very practical man. And because I deal with trauma and the mind-body connection and the ways in which we hold information in our bodies. And if we're not processing that information, we can create an environment internally that can cause things like cancer and disease and depression and all sorts of stuff. And since my father was open to those kinds of dialogues, I would just get in there like, this is second and third chakra. Is there anything that you have to reconcile within your relationship with your family around shame, expectations, abuse? And my father really like tried to process it with me. And I also had tons of opinions about diet.
Obsessed with diet. Oh my God. They call me the Gestapo in the house because I'm like, no sugar,
of course,
no carbs, nothing. But did he know the chakras like you did? Like, how advanced was his yoga compared to yours?
Not to the same degree.
Okay,
not the same degree. But he was, you know, available. But my father said to me at one point, you and I are having two different experiences of my cancer. And my experience is none of your business. And that really floored me because it meant that no matter, I had to give the space for him to do, feel, create his plan of either healing or dying in the way that was appropriate for him. And I really couldn't interfere. I could offer guidance if he was open to it and if he asked. Otherwise, I had to mind my own business. And it was hard because it was a loss of control.
Yeah, helpless.
Yeah. Like if I could give him this one thing, then maybe I could save his life. I put that in quotes. And, you know, that wasn't the way it was supposed to go down. But it was intimate and intense, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah.
And now that I'm on the other side of it, I wouldn't have changed any of it. It transformed me as a human being. It transformed our role from father, daughter into two souls walking each other home, as Ram Dass says.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, it's so hard.
I know. I'm so sorry.
Oh, damn.
I know.
Ooh. Yeah.
You know, my mom said to me this morning, the caregiver came and she's so sweet. It's our first day. I said, Mom, she's really nice, isn't she? And she goes, yeah, Maria, she reminds me of my mother. I was like, maybe she is. Mm-hmm. I said, we all need our mom when we're sick. Maybe that Yaya is here with you. And she's like, I want her to take me with her. Mm-hmm. I want to go up there. I want to see my baby. I want to see my mom. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah. I go, no, you're not allowed. Mm-hmm. And so your conversation with your dad is kind of, my mom would not have verbalized it like that, I think, in English.
I remember my mom always struggling with her hair. It's frizzy, Maria, my mom would say in her Greek accent. Diehis, what do you have? I tried so hard to find her products. I wish I could share these products I'm using now with her because I know she would be so happy to finally have good hair days. I've always believed that hair is a woman's best accessory. And with Way's new anti-frizz cream, you can ensure that your hair always looks its best without the frizz stealing the spotlight. It's a lightweight cream that not only provides immediate frizz control, but also helps prevent heat damage. And get this, it lasts up to 72 hours. That's 3 whole days of frizz-free, gorgeous hair. Way seriously has some of my favorite products for taming the frizz. Pro tip, one of my biggest discoveries is using the Way hair oil on the ends of my hair before I dry it. Let me tell you, it's a game changer. Once it's dry, my hair looks so smooth and polished, I don't even need to do anything else. It is incredible. I love it. Frizz-free, up your schedule with Way. Go to the Way, theouai.com, and enter the promo code HEALSQUAD for 15% off any product. That's the Way, theouai.com, promo code HEALSQUAD. Trust me, you won't regret it.
But I was like, no, you're not allowed to go. Like, we have a lot more to do here. Like, and I'm working my butt off to keep you here.
Yeah.
Like, I was making my mom's vitamins the other day, and it's like a chore because, as you know, like when you know what you need to give them, you're giving them everything. And her brain, by the way, has been sharper than ever these last few months. And I realize I'm giving her Dr. Black stuff. Has a brain pill he created, a brain supplement. I think it's called Cogevity. And so she's on that. She's on omega-3s from Dr. Amen. She's on turmerics and all this stuff. And I swear it's made a difference. Mm-hmm. And so then I started making them for my dad because he's taking care of her. And I'm like, can't lose him. Like, we need him to be super strong. And so I'm making him his pills and his vitamins. And we're just...
Yeah,
it's insanity. It's crazy.
It's
but...
amazing. There will be moments that you will look back in... regardless of the end result, and I pray the end result is just positive on every level for your family, but regardless, this will bring you so close.
Yeah.
It's so vulnerable. And just say all the things. Say all the things. That was something. I remember one time when my father was, he was really sick at this point, and we're in bed together with my mom watching TV, you know, and I'm laying between them.
I do that too.
Yeah. And my father says to my mother, Alice, get out of the room. I want to talk to my daughter. And this may be 3 months before he died. And, you know, my mother kind of looks at my dad, you know, and there's something exchanged between them. And she just nodded her head, turned off the TV and left. And he pulls me onto his body. And he was so frail at that time. And I remember with my head on his chest, I could hear his heartbeat. And I'm thinking, are there 1,000 beats left? You know, are there 10 beats left? 1 beat left? And my father, he puts his arms around me and he says, my baby, my baby. He starts to tell me how much he loves me and how amazing I am and how proud he is of me. And in a split second, as he's saying the words, I thought, oh my God, my father is saying goodbye.
Yeah.
And I thought, I can't. I'm not ready for this. This is not happening. And I dissociate. I just get out of my body.
Yep.
I hear maybe 4 words of that whole conversation. And every once in a while, I'd say to myself, Sean, get in your body. Don't miss this moment. This is too important. And it's important to him. Here are the things. And when it was over, like, maybe I got 10% of what he said. But I... he says, now get out of the room and go get me a Coke. And at that point, I would have given my father anything. You know, it was over. And so I didn't. I yelled down to my mother to get him the Coke. And I go into my room and just shut down. And no, I don't cry. I just shut down and fall asleep. And maybe a week later, I'm in bed with my mom and dad watching TV. And my father says, Alice, get out of the room. I want to talk to my daughter. So my mother looks at my dad, you know, looks at me, shrugs, she leaves the room. And my father starts telling me how much he loves me and how great I am. And I'm thinking, what the fuck? We did this already.
Yeah.
Like, no. And I kept saying, like, no, he needs to say the things and you know, get back in your body. And maybe this time I heard 30%. Well, to make a long story short, my father did this 9 times before he died. 9 times. But by the 9th time, I heard every word. We planned out the music that he wanted for his funeral, the things that he needed me to say to the different people in the room. He wanted the songs Highway to Hell. And my father was very funny and very dark that way. But 100% of that conversation, like, I heard, and I cried and he cried, and we thanked each other and forgave each other, all the stuff. And I remember walking out of the room. He said, "Now go get me a Coke." And I went down and I said to my mother, "If my father says goodbye to me one more time, I'm going to kill him." And it wasn't until after my father died that I realized what he had done. That the experience of death and dying was really so overwhelming to my psyche that I was just really in denial. And it was like I knew what the end result was for all of us. But there was something about my nervous system that wasn't allowing me to accept and embrace and do the things. But by my father getting me to talk about it and normalizing it again and again and again.
He prepared you.
Yes. It let me express, discharge the energy, and cry. And by crying and being that little girl in that moment and letting him be the daddy, letting him be like, "You know what? You're going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. It's all cool. We're all good. Thank you. I love you." By doing that, let me discharge the energy enough to be present. And that was the greatest gift my father ever gave me.
Wow.
Because when he did pass, my nervous system was prepared. And it would not have been had he not let me communicate my emotions and my vulnerability. I don't know if he did that on purpose. My fault, you know, I really don't. But he did it.
Yeah.
And that was very liberating. So for anyone who's listening to this, who's going through this, the extraordinary, even if it's in the right order of things, it's a lot. Your heart will break and it will heal. And what I know in my soul and in my body, when I walk the world, I'm my father's DNA.
Yeah.
I feel him in my walk, in my laugh, in the way in which I experience the world. There's certain things that I appreciate now because I know my father would have loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's in my body, I'm like, "All right, Dad, I'm going to do this one for you. I'm going to go watch this movie or experience this particular sunset because I know how much he'd enjoy experiencing it, and he can through
you.
Mine." Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I wish you and your family the best.
Thank you. Oh, boy.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, you know what? Don't be, because yeah. I'm not the only one going through it.
No.
You know, there are so many people suffering. But it is interesting how they prepare us, because my mom's doing the same thing, mm-hmm. and I know it. And only through EMDR was I able, because I'm really good at disassociating and disconnecting too, because I don't want to feel pain. Hello. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to feel pain. And I really related to that discussion in the book. And so after a session with EMDR, my mom literally had the talk with me, like mm-hmm. right after. It was as if she knew. And I was sitting there and she was like, when I go, I want you to keep smiling. I want you to keep dancing and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I'm losing it. Yeah. And I'm just sitting there like stiff, like next to her on the couch, like trying not to feel because I don't want to feel. And then I was like, "You have to let go. You have to let go. This is your moment. Say everything you want to say that you haven't been saying." And I was just like blurted out. I'm like, "I just want you to know I did everything I could and I love you so much," and blah, blah, blah. And like, I just, mm-hmm. like, it was so scary. Why is it so scary for us to say what we want to say to the people that we love the most? Mm-hmm. Why?
It means admitting to ourselves there's an end. It's the child inside that just doesn't want to believe it. Like, that was the greatest gift I gave my dad, was dropping to my knees and saying, "I'm going to miss you so much." And just putting my head on his chest and saying, "I don't want this to happen. Who am I without that identity of my
yes.
mother and father?" You know, and we're blessed to have those relationships. Not a lot of people don't have that. And what does that loss mean? And it's not normalized in our society, unfortunately. You go to other cultures and death is a part of life and it's ritualized and it's acknowledged and everything is done and it's nurtured, not as an ending, but as a transformation, a celebration.
Yeah.
Our culture doesn't do that. It's a finality. And we have to find ways to normalize it. What my dad insisted I do, and it was really hard. He said to me before he died, he wanted me to teach a workshop called Yoga for a Broken Heart. And I had to do it within 3 months after he died. So it was still fresh in my own body.
Wow.
And so that I was present to my own trauma around death and dying.
Well, he knew you were going to have the trauma. So mm-hmm. he wanted you to work on it.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah. Very much so. And
special.
Also complex, like all, you know, crazy. And
yeah. But that's like, it's so special for him to have been so forward thinking about plotting out your healing.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing to say how much he loves you and that he's going to miss you and, you know, a few little anecdotes, right? But to then plot out your healing, which is what he did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So cool.
He really just felt that death wasn't normalized and we had to communicate it. And by practicing yoga and creating environments where people can literally physically discharge the energy so they can feel, whether it's the loss of an animal or a child going to school, like leaving home, a divorce, any kind of betrayal, grief runs deep in our bodies. And if we suppress that grief, we deny really our own vulnerability, our own femininity, our own resonance with grace when we do that. But it's because we haven't been taught how to hold.
As a first-time mom with a baby, I'm always on the go, whether it's running errands, getting my coffee, going to doctor's appointments, or just spending quality time with little Athena. And that's why I rely on Wonderful Pistachios to keep me fueled and ready for anything, no matter where I am. Kevin even keeps a bag stashed in the nursery. You know, for the nighttime hunger moments. Wonderful Pistachios comes in a variety of flavors and sizes, making them the perfect snack to have literally any time, whether I'm enjoying them during a quick break in between taping this show or I'm on the go and it's in the diaper bag. I do carry it in my travel bag and they're in my car. At this point, when I'm leaving the house, I think keys, wallet, Wonderful Pistachios. Bonus, Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts with 6 grams of protein in every 1 ounce serving. So on top of all that, they keep me feeling satisfied. I'm energized while I'm juggling all this crazy stuff in life. Next time you're looking for a convenient and guilt-free snack, head over to www.wonderfulpistachios.com and stock up on your favorite flavors today. Minus the sweet chili.
Both the shadow of life as well as the light as being unified. And until we can get really good at talking about it, it's really hard also to empathize. You know, I said to my dad, thank God you died first before mom. Like that was a gift to prep me for my mother. Because if it was reversed, I don't know if I would have had the capacity. His dying and death has helped my nervous system a little bit more prepare for that other inevitability. But I hope that when that comes, that it's something that I can walk towards with honor and a sense of the sacred and to be able to be that present as I was able to be towards the end with my dad. But it's not something I look forward to.
Yeah.
It's just something I think in our cultures we need to talk about more.
So how do we do this?
How do we – doing what we're doing right now. I have no doubt in my mind that people who are listening to this, there's someone – that this is touching their heart in a really big way. This is what they needed to hear today. Because odds are someone is walking somebody home.
Yeah.
And that's Ram Dass. You know, that's someone is in it this moment. And someone is shut down. And someone is scared. And someone is doing all the right things. And someone is praying that the end result is different than it might be. And they need to hear this conversation and that they also need to hear that they will laugh again. They will remember really amazing moments that grief comes in these unusual and unexpected waves and that the presence of that being lives within them forevermore. And they will feel that and know that in very odd and unexpected moments. And to carry the traditions and the rituals and the joy and the grief of their ancestors and pass that information on forward to their children or the children in their lives, just to keep not necessarily the memory, but the resonance of those who walked before alive and well in the future.
Yeah. Where were you in your kind of evolution when your dad died?
It was 9 years ago, so I was pretty far along, but it doesn't matter. I was, when you're in it, I was 8 years old.
Yeah.
Like emotionally, but with pretty good tools. If I could remember to grab them.
That's the thing.
There. Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm so glad you just said that because, you know, I've been on the journey too, and I've been acquiring the tools and sometimes you forget to grab them.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, wait, why did it take me 3 months to remember something that I had right here that I could have used? Mm-hmm. And I like thinking about it like that, rather than, you know, kind of beating yourself up. It's like, okay, I had the tool. I just didn't know where I put it. Yeah. My dad forgets to put his tools away all the time.
There you go.
So, I like that a lot, actually. Yeah. That's helpful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're in grief and overwhelmed, like, you're just lucky, like, just to brush your teeth in the morning and change your underwear. Like, yeah. That's a victory.
Yeah.
Let alone grab emotional psychic tools. But if you have a support system and you have resources for that, use it. Whether it's therapy, grief support counseling, the program, just a good friend. But to find ways to talk to others about it, because everyone goes through grief and the overwhelm of caregiving. People will experience that in different ways. And the more it's affirmed that you're not alone, that the mistakes, I put that in quotes, the mistakes you think you're making are actually really normal. And to continually ask yourself the question as you're going through the process of caregiving, just what would love do? And that will always guide you to make the next right, best decision, including letting them go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my. What would love do? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it means saying goodbye, you know, and sometimes it means, you know, making sure that they have the turmeric and they have, you know, they don't have the sugar.
Yeah.
And, you know, put your foot down or giving them the book to read.
Yeah. Or like taking your foot off the pedal sometimes and just loving them. Like that was one of the things I was getting so custodial, right? Like, got to do this, got to do that. Da-da-da-da. And it's like, wait, no, she would probably, and I would probably benefit so much more from just sitting at front of a TV and watching Dancing with the Stars and not ordering her around. Cause I'm like producer, like we have to win. Mm-hmm. This is the battle. We need to win. And then, you know, you transition at some point and you're like, wait, it's not about that. Now it's like, we have to think about quality and time in a different way.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Wow. Yeah, I'm surprised we got on this conversation.
Me too.
But it brings my heart. Like, I love sharing. You know, it's so human. It's so human and it's so vulnerable. And so I didn't expect to like go here.
Me neither. I go where it feels. Right? And that's where you start. It just felt right. Mm-hmm. And you're right. People are listening and they need it.
Yeah.
And it is scary. And a lot of us do shut down and we miss those opportunities. Yeah. And maybe some people won't miss those opportunities now to have those talks. And it's funny, a psychic, John Edward, had told me when my mom first got diagnosed, he's like, there are many conversations that need to be had that you have not had. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified to have them. And I just started having them in the last few months. And and it changed our whole relationship. Mm-hmm. And brought us closer together. And so, you know, you're healing, like I'm healing from so many things through this terrible time, you know, because you see, you learn so much through it. And there's reasons why these things happen, unfortunately. Like, mm-hmm. like you said, and it's funny, I texted it to a friend of mine who was in a tough place. I texted him this page called, it says, "Angels are everywhere. Sometimes your teachers will be subtle in their offerings. Sometimes they will break your heart. Often the lessons will be incomprehensible. Always they will be potent and necessary for the evolution of your soul." And I sent that to him because it really moved me. Because, you know, when we talk about it on the show a lot, we always see problems and we're like, oh, can you believe this? Mm-hmm. And it's like, wait, but if you really look at it, like, challenges are opportunities for growth. So why are we looking at things? Just like we're not conditioned to handle death, mm-hmm. we're not conditioned to handle problems. And we're always just so shocked when they come up. And it's like, wait, guys, we got a long life of problems ahead of us. Yeah. No one's got easy street ever, mm-hmm. ever. And so I sent that to him and he was like, oh, thank you so much. I really mm-hmm. needed this today.
Well, you know, that I remember in that same conversation I had where my father said, you know, we're having two different experiences of my cancer and my experience is none of your business. My father also said this to me, and this is in relationship to that. He said he did not believe that his body manifested cancer because of unresolved anger. He just didn't believe it. He didn't feel it. But what he did believe was that cancer was an answer to his prayer. And I asked him, of course, to elaborate on that. And he said that he felt that when we were growing up, that he wasn't as present as a father that he would have liked to have been. My parents were really young, and, you know, he always had this vision of the kind of father he would like to be. And he said he, as he got older, he would pray that before he died, that he had the opportunity to show up for his children in that capacity. And he said it took cancer for me to become that dad. And so he really felt that he prayed for clarity. He prayed for transformation. He prayed for growth. He prayed to be that dad and try cancer. Could have been any number of things, of course. It doesn't mean the end result is like, okay, you know, cancer. It's not like he made cancer happen. Yeah. That's just life. Life just is. It's just what you do with that.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, here's this thing. And this thing made him more vulnerable, more honest, more present to his children, to me especially. And so there was a gift, even though it took him away from us, it also in so many ways brought him closer in a way that couldn't have happened had cancer not happened the way that it did at that time. And so, yeah, angels show up in a variety of ways, and that we need to have the pray not to change our experiences. That's just, it's not practical. Again, it is what it is. But we can pray for the strength to perceive our experiences through a different lens. Mm-hmm. And that really requires faith and grace. And it's hard because we're conditioned like, no, this is bad and this is good.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's really no such thing. We can't know the light without the shadow. So how do we be in relationship to the shadow and be present to it and feel into it and let it mature or evolve our soul, let it awaken us without any attachment to an end result?
Yeah, that's something I wanted to talk about. I have a bunch of things in here marked where it says explain. and I think understanding that, right? Like you can't know the light without the shadow. Elaborate more on that for people because, and even with people, like as you say, angels come in different forms. And Billy, oh my God, the story of Billy in this book. Billy saying, God is right there.
Yeah.
God is in within her. God is within him. You know, we all have someone in our life that we just wish was not there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Someone who is disruptive at like best. And, you know, we have now become part of the culture of like, okay, just separate.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you're related to them and we're all connected. So you can't really separate, right? And so how do we navigate that?
Mm-hmm. It's a reframe of perspective. I'm a yoga teacher, so I believe in that interdependency, that everything is connected, that there is no separation. And actually the cause of so much conflict in our world is the fact that we do think that there is a me and a you, an us and a them. And that creates a power dynamic of dominance and oppression that's evident in our personal relationships. It's evident in our global dynamics, including our politics. And so as a yogi, we have to take responsibility to look at where do we participate in the very separation that we suggest we want to see healed or transformed. Often what I see, the problem within the spirituality communities is that we're so addicted to the light and that we bypass the shadow. But if everything is connected, then the light and the shadow also have to be in relationship to each other. You don't get to know the light without the shadow. So in yoga, we're taught that what bonds us is energy. Energy is vibration with information. And so the fact that we can see each other, that's a vibration, it's gross energy. It moves at a rate that's slow enough where we can see. But there's subtle energy. Subtle energy you can't see, but you can feel it, like love.
Mm-hmm.
And joy, it has its own particular resonance. But so does hate and shame and rage and guilt and grief. They're vibrations. So trauma. Trauma is anything that overwhelms our capacity to cope and leaves us feeling helpless, hopeless, out of control, or unable to respond. Everybody experiences trauma. There's a difference, though, between shock trauma and developmental trauma. And people who think of trauma often think shock. rape, murder, gang violence, things that happen.
Accidental
war.
Deaths. I love that you explained this too.
Mm-hmm. And but developmental trauma. Those are the traumas that happen as we're growing up, before we have words to put on our big feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Bullying, death of a loved one, divorce. When trauma happens, chemicals release from the brain into the body. We're put into fight, flight, freeze, or collapse. So the moment of overwhelm, what we will do to create a sense of safety or control, remember, put us young, you know, mm-hmm. seven, 8 years old, our bodies contract. Because our nervous system says unsafe, the body contracts. In that moment of contraction, the information behind the trauma, the rage, the fear, the guilt, the grief, the shame, whatever it might be, energy, think of that as a narrative. That story is now imprinted within our cells. Now, if we're young and we're given space to scream, to cry, to rage, what happens is we discharge the energy. And we're able to release it. And like the animals do in the wild, they don't hold on to the mm-hmm. fear. They literally shake it out. We don't do that in our culture. At best, we might get this, like, oh, you're sad? Here's a cookie. Or, oh, you're angry? Let's go shopping. You know, yeah. We'll buy something. Or I'll give you something to be angry about. We're taught to self-soothe or be shamed by our big feelings. Later on in life, that self-soothing can become drugs or alcohol or more food or sex or whatever it might be. But it's a way to anesthetize or numb ourselves from the shadow, from the overwhelm of our own humanity. And so often we get on a spiritual path thinking like we're going to feel better by let's just be compassionate for everyone and forgive everyone without giving the body a chance to discharge the humanity of rage and shame and let that energy out. We think that that's not spiritual. Well, it'll come out sideways. It'll come out in passive aggressive little remarks or again, using substances so as not to feel anything. And so my hope for people is that they're willing to recognize that the shadow is a huge teacher. It's because our anger is what will teach us forgiveness. Our shame will teach us acceptance. All of the shadow has its, the opposite is the wrong word, but it has its complementary energy
mm-hmm.
that can't be learned without having to go into the darkness, into that cave.
Yeah.
The gift of this is compassion and empathy, so that suddenly we see these people who have broke our hearts, people in our families who just feel that we cannot reconcile who they are or what they say. We look at them and say instead, oh, they're in trauma. They have suppressed some energy and they are acting out in this way because they don't have any other tools
mm-hmm.
so that they can feel their own vulnerability. And suddenly we stop personalizing it as in the same way
mm-hmm.
and recognize that we're all here doing the best we can with what little we know based on the trauma that we have and the tools that have been available to us at that time. And so I try to remind myself of that and feel really grateful that I have had access to tools and a support system that values the inner work and doesn't shame it or make it secondary to like intellectual practical thinking. And knowing that most people in the world don't have that.
Yeah.
And so I could see that in the micro and also in the macro. Our world right now is in trauma. But when hate meets hate and fear meets fear, the cycle of dominance and oppression continues. So somebody has to change. So I have to dismantle the systems within myself that project rage, shame, hate onto another without seeing and experiencing their humanity. Once I can do that, then maybe I can actually contribute to the healing of this planet.
So that was so beautiful. How do we actually do it? Because, for example, I have a brother who I've had a difficult relationship with, and I am evolved enough to know that he's in trauma. And so I do have those moments where I'm like, okay, he's in trauma, and I do know that he doesn't have the tools to get himself out of his own way. But how do I allow that to not contaminate and hurt me in my life?
Mm-hmm.
Because we had a very long stretch where we didn't speak. And then my mom's illness
changed that. And then for a short time, everything was good. And then it went back to the other way again. And it's just, it's, I know I spent the summer looking up at two trees in my yard and I don't know why. And I just kept associating the two of us there. And I was like, okay, I know this is supposed to be teaching me something, oh, but I don't want to learn this lesson. It was like, it was almost like how resistant you were to everything at first, because it sucks. It's work. Yeah. Like, I'm working on everything else. I don't want to work on this. Mm-mm. But I know, and I know people who are listening right now that are going through the same thing, and they keep asking me for advice. And it's such a tough thing to give advice on because I haven't figured it out. I know he's there to teach me things. I know he's in trauma. But why is it my job to fix him? Mm-mm. And is it?
Mm-mm. Well, that's you just answered really your own question in there. Like, the mirror has just been reflected back. All you can do is love and pray for him. That's all you can do. And then find safe spaces for you to process your disappointment and your rage without trying to spiritualize it. Just, there's a saying that we have with my sisters in my community, which is, you can't get to the bless you without going through the fuck you, because it's energy. And so you need to find a place where you can process that big F you that you feel, because that's real and it's human and it's been with you since you were a little kid. But you don't want, if you're not processing that, that F you will come out on him in other ways at other times, creating more of a rift.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's at capacity. That's just who he is and that's how he will be. So therapy, all sorts of ways you can go to make sure you process. But also, what he's holding up the mirror is looking at the codependent part of you that has to fix everything. That's who you are. You know you can probably do it better than anybody else. You probably can't really ask anybody for support because they don't have the capacity that you do. But also going even deeper, is that where you learned your value? Is that how you were loved, by being the fixer, the caretaker, the mediator? And what happens to that little girl if you can't hold that role? Are you still lovable?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's deep what he's reflecting back, because he's not letting you he's not letting you satisfy that codependent part of you that wants to make this neat. Now, I'm speaking, I don't know you well enough to be able to make these assessments, of course. This is very general to anyone who's listening. It's much more complex than what I just said.
Yeah.
And that would be one of the things you might want to get curious about, is what is he holding up that's showing you where you're disconnected from your own grace, from God, because he is. And what love looks like is trusting that he's on his own path, that's path is none of your business. That's between him and the God of his own understanding.
Mm-hmm.
He's here to also learn what love is, but the rate in which he learns what that is happens in a very unique timeline based on his own trauma. And all you can do is be loving without letting yourself get hurt, because you can't do that either. That's never okay. So you have to decide what those boundaries look like, maintain those boundaries, even if it feels so uncomfortable, and continually give him back to God and be very clear in the dynamics of that relationship, what he's capable of, what your expectations are, and how to perhaps reframe those expectations so they can get met in a realistic way.
Yeah.
I'm not saying any of this is easy. You know, I've got my own dynamics like that in my life.
Yeah.
And yet I have examples also in my life where it has worked. Where grace has shown up and relationships have been healed. It is possible, but it's dependent upon how you show up in the circumstance.
Yeah, taming your expectations is a big part, I think, for sure. I mean, there's so much there. I want to talk about your story, because you talk a lot about how we hold our stories. And part of that is from the traumas, and I loved how you explained how it's like embedded in our muscles, and how when you started doing yoga, things were expressed. And just reading your journey through yoga, you know, you're kind of rebellion in a sense while you were in it, like in your kind of pushback, but then the body doesn't lie. The body was like, thank you, and I need to express this, and you're horrified. I mean, this book is so good. Anybody who's listening, you have to read this book. But I really want, and actually, look, I'm on the page and I didn't even know. It was from Billy. So Billy was your friend. Mm-hmm. Explain briefly who Billy was in your life, because he's a big, big part of the book. He's the backbone of the book, yeah, I feel like.
Yeah. Billy was, when I moved to New York City back in the 80s, right after I graduated high school, so it was 84, I worked in nightclubs. And I worked at Limelight, which was this, it's a very famous nightclub. It doesn't exist anymore. But in Limelight, there was an all-male gay sex club called Heaven. And I was the only cisgendered woman that was allowed in this particular part of the club. And I met this man, Billy. And Billy, African-American man in his late 50s, he was sober. At that time, I was doing a lot of drugs and drinking. And he would just offered me advice. And one day, Billy came in, didn't show up in the club for a while. And at that time, there was no cell phones or anything like that, so I had no way of contacting him. And after about 3 weeks or so, Billy comes into the club, crosses through the dance floor. And I noticed something seemed off, if you will, but I couldn't have identified that. He's looked frail. And I leaned over the bar, and I went to hug him and pull him into me. And as I did, I noticed all these open wounds on his neck and his shoulder. So I pull back, and I said, oh, my God, Billy, what is that? And I remember him touching his shoulder and saying, they're symptomatic of my disease. And I knew right away what he was about to say. But I was so young and so inexperienced that I was so terrified of his answer. And he said, I have AIDS. And I recoiled. And he asked if I wanted to understand more. You know, I felt so much shame around my reaction to it. And he explained everything. And at the very end of the conversation, I said to him, well, Billy, what's going to happen? And he said, I'm dying. And I asked him if he was afraid. And he said, no, because of his faith in God. And I recoiled again, because at that time I was an atheist for a variety of reasons, as I explore in the book. And he laughs, though, and asks me why. He says to me, you know, don't you believe in God? And I said, no. And he asked me why and explained. And I remember him just smiling and nodding, and then him saying to me at the end of the conversation, Sean, do you want to see God right now? And I look around the room, and, you know, there's men, they're making out, and they're half naked, and it's all sorts of fabulous debauchery happening. And I laughed, and I said, yeah, you show me God here. And he points to Danny the Wonder Pony, who was this white guy who used to come in with a saddle on his back and half naked at Chaps. And for a dollar, you can climb on his back, and he would trot around the floor, and you can hit him with a switch. And Billy points to Danny and said, God's right there. And then he points to a woman at that time we would have referred to as a cross-dresser. Now we understand that person to be transgender. And Violet was her name. About 6 foot tall. Huge. About 6'6". And Billy points to Violet and says, God's right there. And then points to somebody else in the club. God's right there. And then Billy takes his hand, big hand, and he places it over my heart, across my chest. He picks my hand up off the table where I had it and puts it on his heart like this. And he says, Sean, God's right here. He said, I'm going to tell you something now, and I hope you remember this the whole of your life. Ignore the story and see the soul. And remember to love. You'll never regret it. And then he went on to explain to me that Danny the Wonder Pony, Violet, me, him, AIDS, all of it's just a story. It's not who we are. They are aspects of our journey, but they're not our essence. That all of us are here to learn what love is. And he went on to explain how all of us will have these unique journeys, but we are all being led to this transformative process that, depending on our karma, is going to be so unique. And it opened me to experience God in the shadow, God in humanity, God in the dark stuff, that God wasn't something that existed outside of ourselves, that it's in every blessing, it's in every heartbreak, it's in every death.
Suffering.
It's in all of it. And that there's in every experience the opportunity for grace, But what we can't do is also ignore our humanity by bypassing it and jumping to spirit. We've got to feel the loss and feel the rage and the jealousy and the imperfections and the inadequacies and be in relationship with it. Because as he told me, it's what will develop empathy. And empathy, he said, is what will change this world. And so that was my experience with Billy, the greatest angel in my life who brought me to God.
Well, and then you gave him to us because I love Billy and I don't even know Billy.
Billy died.
But Billy was so special for, you know, when you think of where he is, he's in this gay sex club. But when you hear his story about his family abandoning him when he came out and he just created a whole other life and just kind of dealt with it. Mm-hmm. I felt so bad for him. Mm-hmm. and so I also applaud you so much for being so raw in this book about your journey and your experiences. You know, I mean, you were really raw. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so relatable and honest because, you know, you can see you now, you're internationally acclaimed yoga instructor, speaker, and this is your first book, right?
Yeah.
And you're an author now. But your journey will inspire so many people who would never think they could have this evolution, right? Like who you are now is a completely different person, even though you're the same person. Mm-hmm. There's a transformation that's taken place, right? Because even when you start to talk about the Billy story, you kind of shifted a little. Mm-hmm. It was almost like you went back into that time.
You were
that Sean for a split second. It was a funny thing I noticed.
That's an interesting observation because I'll tell you the truth. In the writing of the book, I had to, I've never written a book before. I didn't know what to do. I had a lot of limiting beliefs around it. Before I wrote it, I prayed. And be careful what you pray for because I include a portion of that prayer in the very beginning of the book because I really ask for transformation and for clarity and to step into this mystery. And the very first thing I wrote after I said my prayer and asked for all this guidance, I took a breath and I wrote, "My name is Cece." And I stopped short and I thought, "Oh God, no." Because Cece is my nickname. It's the childhood name that I had. It's the name my family calls me. And Sean is my birth name, but I didn't shift to Sean until I left home, moved to New York City. There's a difference between Cece and Sean. Now, Sean has had therapy since she was, I'm talking about myself in third person, so I apologize, but in this context. But Sean has therapy, mentorship. I've been a teacher for a very, very long time. I've done a lot of deep transformational work. I've got a massive support team. I'm 53 years old, so I have it's a long arc where I can look back with neutrality to my experience. Cece never had that. Cece has to live in the experience because Cece had childhood sexual trauma. Cece had obsessive compulsive disorder. Cece had anxiety. All these things that led me to yoga and to therapy and to giving up drugs and alcohol. But there is two distinct relationships that live within me. So when I wrote, "My name is Cece," I gasped because I knew that the book was going to demand me to have to go back in time, in present time, and not teach. And that's how I broke up the book. The first part of every narrative is me in present time telling the story. The second half of the chapter is me as Sean saying, "Here's what was actually happening. Here's what I couldn't have known.
Yep.
Here are the teachings that support this." Like, holy shit, this was actually perfect in the transformational process. But when you're in it, it feels like anything other than that.
Yep.
So it's an interesting observation on your end because when I tell this, that was the hardest part about writing the book. It was easy to teach because I don't actually have to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And that's something I need to dismantle the identity of that. You know, my identity actually of being teacher keeps me dissociated from my own humanity. That's the shadow of the teacher. And so in the writing of this, it was very traumatic. I had to work in therapy every week. I had a series of mostly women mentors around me because it was very re-traumatizing to have to live into the trauma again. Because if I don't feel it, the reader's not going to feel it.
Yep.
And I knew that, and it terrified me. But my hope was to also model, if that's a wrong word, but model, because I don't have a better one, just what it means just to own the story.
Yeah.
And not have the story own you. And that it's, as you go through the book, the rate in which I, and I put this in quotes, get it, it gets shorter and shorter, but I still make mistakes. Later on in the book, I'm dealing with social justice. I'm dealing with my own internalized racism. I'm dealing with what service means and what help means. And I make countless mistakes, even with the best of intentions, not understanding generational trauma, mm-hmm. not understanding historical trauma and all the ways in which that influences my service. And all of that has to get unpacked. And if I'm not willing to own it, why would I expect anyone else in the world to?
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is, it's like as it's happening, there's another part of my brain that's like, oh, wait a second. I got a tool for this. And it teaches me how to say I'm sorry quicker and how to reconcile it faster. But it doesn't mean I don't make those very human errors that we do. And that's what I wanted to hopefully show people within the arc of the spiritual practice. It's that it's not about perfection. It's about the process itself. Mm-hmm. And so the writing of it was really, really hard. And one of my mantras during that process was I had to write everything, but I didn't need to print anything. That was when
ooh,
I...
Oh, yeah. Good, good one.
The trauma that I experienced, the agency over my body was taken away. But what I do have is agency over my story. I get, as an adult, to share what I want to and what I don't want to. But by communicating it, writing it, processing it, my nervous system got so discharged that I was like, oh, yeah, I can share that. I'm cool with that. And it gave me space to discuss it with my family to make sure that everyone understood what my intentions were so they weren't going to be taken by surprise by anything. And so I really wanted to demystify the role of leader, is spiritual leader, if you will, in the community, and say show that no, this is my leadership shows up because of my vulnerability
mm-hmm.
and my willingness to own the messiness of life without shame. Because if one person can read the story and identify with it and feel comfortable reframing it within themselves and seeing that there's a pathway,
yep.
then I've done my job and am honored to have been able to do that in this lifetime.
I love that. That's exactly what I was thinking. And what's interesting is, again, Billy being the backbone, ignore the story, see the soul. So mm-hmm. I was captivated by your stories. And then seeing the transformation was so cool. Mm-hmm. Seeing the, you know, the whole evolution, I loved it. It was really helpful. And I loved, you know, I marked here, like, know that every person is a teacher and every experience is a teaching. And it's stuff that we need to hear and we need to really internalize and remember. When we judge, we project our fear, shame, and guilt onto others and see them as other. Yoga says there is no other. I loved how you explained yoga in this book, because I think it's still hard to understand, even for me, mm-hmm. right? And to understand how incredibly helpful it is. Like, I thought of yoga. I started doing yoga, gosh, maybe last year, and I was like, okay, I'm going to do it for stretching purposes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I did it for a while for stretching purposes. But when I read this, it makes me understand that there's a deeper thing to it. Like, how would you explain it to people who are like me, that are seeing just such a surface level of it and what it can do for your healing? Because we all have our traumas, some bigger, some smaller, some more, some less.
Well, when you say someone like you, who I can see is clearly on a spiritual path. To me, yoga is magic, but magic with a K. And magic means shifting energy at will. And that's what happens when you practice yoga. You transform the contraction into expansion, the fear into faith. But there's a physiological, emotional, spiritual component that works within that. And for me, and it's not for everybody, I had to get through layers and layers and layers of tension before I could feel my vulnerability. Because with trauma, remember I said there's that contraction that happens. That contraction makes us think we're safe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's on the other side of that contraction. It could be more abuse. It could be abandonment. My nervous system won't allow for that release of tension because of the unknown. What yoga does, the yoga asana, the physical poses, you stretch. Now, at first, you just feel better. Like you're just like, oh, that felt good in my body because your nervous system is titrating. Like I feel stronger. And that's a part of the journey. Because what's happening is their nervous system is getting acclimated because the emotions live within the tissues. As the tissues expand, the emotions, that resonance, rises to the surface. And at first, what it looks like is distraction. We fidget mm-hmm. on the mat. We'll fantasize about like food or the sex we might have one more time someday. We'll project onto the people around us, like, oh, I wonder where they got their leggings. Mm-hmm. We'll use our other senses as a way to avoid the sensation of the emotion, because that's what it is. The sensation is coming up in the body, and the psyche is saying, danger, danger. And so it's looking for something to self-soothe. You go through that process and stay present to the sensation, the feeling. Sometimes, not always, but we can get emotional in the yoga practice. Just, you know, life is fine. Everything is great. And I explore all this mm-hmm. in the book. And all of a sudden, we just feel weepy. Not bad, just weepy. And that's really an important part of the process because our vulnerability is what leads to surrender. And surrender is what opens us to a relationship to the divine within. Everything that we need to know is already within our bodies. Everything. We are manifestations of God, but our tension blocks our ability to feel that part of us. So release the tension. We get out of our heads, we drop into our hearts. So the practice of spirituality is not something that's intellectual, because it's then determined by our five senses, and we're way more than that. It's abstract. So it's a felt experience. But if we're so shut down that we don't feel, we try to make sense of the ineffable,
mm-hmm.
even the incomprehensible. But our hearts tell a different story. So the yoga asana practice helps us to release the tension. It teaches us how to be present to the sensations within our bodies, to observe the ways in which our minds will deliberately distract us from present time so that we can experience the most vulnerable parts of ourselves and be able then to reframe, to see our stories differently. Because if I'm in my anger around the story, that's my ego. But if I'm in my grief around a story, your heart opens to it, like with your brother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had those moments where you can physically be in the grief and in the sadness of it, you would experience your brother differently. Whereas when you're in your anger around it, and again, nothing wrong with being in that because that's part of the process, but you have your body responds differently. You're not available because yep. it's not safe to be mm-hmm. available. And there's no evidence of that safety. Yoga teaches your system how to titrate so that you can be able to stand in front of somebody or something and still have that energetic boundary within yourself. And so the practice teaches you then to also understand how stories live in the body. Literally, they live in the body. People who are listening can't see me, but I'm pointing to the different chakras within the body. And each chakra, each vortice of energy, which regulates the prana in the system. And if the prana is moving fluidly, it impacts our ability to be present. What impacts the chakras is trauma. And so we hold on to the fear. We hold on to the guilt, the shame, the grief, the lies, the illusion, and the attachments. All of that affects our arms, our legs, our intestinal tract, our lower back. And so yoga allows us to also, as you're in these poses, certain poses you don't want to be in, and all your stuff's coming up. Well, if you understand the practice, you're like, why? Why am I so resistant? What is coming up? What part of my body is responding? And what part of this body is in relationship to a specific narrative? Meaning that fear is related to home, safety, family, security. That second chakra, guilt, sexuality. That third is individuation, self-esteem, self-respect, self-control. It gives you a roadmap to work with.
So if you're in a pose that feels super uncomfortable and you're dying for it to be over,
yeah,
that's your pose you need to think about more?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm. Now, there's a difference between discomfort and pain, and a good teacher can help you to navigate that. But if you're like in a hip opener, you know, pigeon pose, double pigeon.
Yeah.
And you're just fidgeting like crazy. As a teacher, that's the medicine. It's right there. Just breathe. What I'm taught and I share in the book at first, breathe and everything changes.
Yeah, I love that.
That's what I learned. But that was, again, that was enough at that time. That's all I could handle. Because there was way more than that that I would find out later on. It's not enough to breathe and everything changes. Because the story is still there. I'm just letting my body acclimate. Later on in the book, I'm exploring what is it that needs to be changed. Mm. In my hips was my childhood sexual trauma. It was the abandonment. It was the sexual trauma of my mother and grandmother and my culture. It was the fear of survival that as a Polish Jew lives in my body. And when I was able just to be present to that sensation and grieve, I grieved my mother and my grandmother and all the ancestors before and realized that all their stories live within me as well. And it's not that it's like, oh, yay, the story's out of my body. But what it does mean is that when I go up against something that threatens my survival, I'm going to be aware that my body just contracted and I am now in a state of reactivity.
Mm.
Nothing can happen in reactivity except more fear, more rage. So, okay, Sean, breathe. You're safe. You're okay. Say a prayer and let this energy release so that you can respond from love, not from fear. But this takes years.
Yeah.
But it doesn't discount those first years for me just getting on the mat. I was just puking and just uncomfortable and annoyed. All of that was so purposeful to get to the next level and the next level and the next level. And it's not over. You know, my yoga now is very much about service. It's about relationship and connection. It's very much off the mat. But it took me having to be on the mat to help me to understand that there really is no such thing as on or off.
Mm.
But I can't know that. I can't know the we until I understand the me. I can't know the collective until I understand the individual. And so yoga gives you a pathway to allow you to be in relationship with all of it.
So how do you know what yoga class is for you? And how do you find the one that's going to give you that transformation? Because I feel like I was doing it and I was just doing it, like I said, for stretching. Mm-hmm. And is it better to be in a class with a lot of people? Because I felt the energy of you being in that class, and I would be the same way. I would be fighting feelings and trying to hold back tears and not wanting to let them out. And like I went to a breathwork class with Kelly Noonan Gores, who yeah. I'm sure you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just like let it out because other people were letting it out. Mm-hmm. No one was looking. Mm-hmm. Like when I would go to Soul Cycle, it was my favorite thing. I'd go in the back of the class and I would cycle. And once they'd get into the inspirational talk, I would like wail and let everything out. But it didn't matter because no one was looking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wonder if like a group class is better than individual, because I was doing individual and I never felt any of that mm-hmm. stuff. But I also didn't know what to look for.
Yeah.
So now I feel like I know what to look for.
It really depends. I mean, no separation between the mind and the body. The body remembers everything. So even in Soul Cycle, you are discharging energy and yeah. you're discharging the grief and the years of living. But a good yoga teacher, it can be a shamanic experience. They guide you. There's an arc that happens that's from birth to death. Death not being an ending, again, death is transformation, but there's a very specific shamanic arc, and not all teachers are capable of taking students, nor should they, because with any shamanic arc, there's this, you have to cross over into two worlds, and if the teacher's not skilled doing that within themselves, it can be just arrogant. Just spiritually arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding teachers who are really, who are priestesses, if you will, in this kind of work is invaluable. And in a group setting, so supportive and healing. But with that said, to me, safety, often safety and intelligence is primary. It's like any kind of artistry. You learn a skill and then you throw it away, mm-hmm. but you always have the foundation. So people who are newer to this, what I recommend is let go for now this idea of having these transformational experiences. Learn how just to simply be in the body. Learn the breath, how to organize. Because what happens in a lot of these more spiritually oriented classes is that to keep the rhythm of the class, you have to make the alignment secondary. But our bodies bend where they're soft, not where they're hard. And so we will often get into these habits avoiding the areas of resistance. But the areas of resistance where the musculature is tight is where the emotion lives. Mm. It's where that's where we need to dive into. So if a student understands how to align their body and stabilize those points of mobility, they're better physically equipped when they go into these more fluid classes to know what to do with their bodies, so that when they're in the rhythm, they're not avoiding those congested areas. The work becomes more accelerated with that kind of information. So to me, that's always really, I try in my classes to bring in both alignment while simultaneously bringing in the trauma-informed work and the energetic work and the shamanic work in really helping people to open to that grace, that once that tension is released, they're no longer hearing my words. They're feeling them because they're words that are already true within their own soul. That's the magical practice. But finding teachers like that it can be really challenging, but they exist. And when your nervous system is ready, they will appear. Mm. And when it happens, it'll blow your soul wide open. But the better the foundation is, to me, the more people can avoid injury.
Yeah.
Because I see that way too often in these practices. And not to be in a rush. You know, as you read in my book, it was 8 years of a physical practice before I had an emotional response because emotions weren't safe for me.
Yeah.
And then it was years of being super indulgent in my yoga practice where all I did was cry and cry and cry before I was able to have the skills of reconciliation and then to learn how to get to the anger. That was a whole other practice. But each one built slowly.
Yeah.
And so for people who are listening to recognize that the spiritual practice, it's a lifelong journey. It's a lifestyle. There are so many different kinds of teachers that will pop in that will be instrumental. And that when your body, nervous system, psyche is ready, the right teacher will show up. And not to be in a rush to make something happen because you saw the person next to you on the mat doing it and thinking somehow maybe you're doing it wrong, because that's not the case.
Wow. Are you still teaching classes?
Oh, yeah.
Where do you teach?
I teach nationally. I don't teach. And when I'm home in LA, I'm just, you know, walking my dog and with my family. Uh-huh. I try not to teach when I'm here. It's more integration for me. So I'm on the road often, and I teach about 250 days out of the year on the road.
Wow.
For a very long time. That's really my life.
So do you do big arena kind of things? Like
arenas?
Like, I would imagine, you know, a lot of people are going. It's one of those kind of situations, right?
I would say sometimes it's anywhere 500 people at festivals. But other times it's more intimate, especially if I'm working with teachers, if I'm teaching them how to find their voice, how to – especially with trauma-informed yoga, it's very important to make sure the container is very safe. Mm-hmm. And so for any other yoga teacher out here with less experience, it's going to seem like a big number, but 100 people, I can handle that container doing the deeper inner work.
Mm.
50 is even better. But for some people, 10, 5, you get the amount of students that your own nervous system can handle and manage, because you have to be really responsible in that environment. So sometimes I cap classes around the work that I do. And it also depends. There's another kind of yoga that I teach off the mat into the world that bridges the gap between yoga, transformational work, social justice, and conscious action. How to take the work that we do and be more effective in creating social change. And so, again, I work with smaller groups with that because we're developing leadership and that needs more one-on-one attention. Mm-hmm. And so it really depends. I enjoy both. I love the big environments. You know, they are shamanic, and it helps me to channel in those rooms because I'm no longer seeing the individual. I'm feeling the connect the collective, and it's very their energy moves through me and it impacts what I'm about to say. I never know what's going to happen in that space because it has to be revealed in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the artistry of that. One-on-one is, there's something else that happens. It's another level of magic. I personally don't prefer that because you really have to work up against someone's ego and their determination and all the stories they're going to tell to try
their expectations in that moment.
Yeah.
Right.
It's harder, but it's also really invaluable. So it depends on where people are at,
wow.
But just to trust it and to be just, my hope is for anyone who listens to be really fully amused by the human experience. It's rough. It's intense. At times it's brutal and it is absolutely magnificent and beautiful and intimate and it's yours and it's mine. And it is holy. And it doesn't always work out the way that we think it should. But it's also always perfect for the development of our individual soul. And if we can have some space to know that this particular lifetime, this is the short term. There is a bigger picture that's happening, that we're being schooled,
mm-hmm.
that this maturation is necessary. And so all these moments are intrinsic to where we are evolving to. And we can't know what that is until we reach what in yoga it's called the samadhi, and until the enlightenment. And none of us are there yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to forgive ourselves for thinking we should know better. We got to forgive others for thinking they should know better. And every day, pray. My non-negotiables, so as not to get triggered or be reactive, yoga, meditation, prayer, therapy, sleep, diet, and play. If I'm not activating any one of those seven things, I know that because of my trauma and my own humanity, that in a very short amount of time,
yep.
I'm going to be hurtful, passive aggressive, controlling, dogmatic, and it's going to feel right. It's going to feel really right. So practice is everything so that we can be aware like, oh, I want to rip that person's head off. Probably not the appropriate response.
And I'm out of alignment.
Mm-hmm. So what do we got to do to ground so that we can be present to our own humanity and also be present to someone else's in love?
Wow. I love that. I also love looking at yoga as something to heal trauma. I never thought about it like that. You know, 'cause you see it in the celebrity world as, you know, a different thing. But is there a type of yoga that mm-hmm. is more transformational and trauma based?
Yes.
What is it called?
Trauma-informed yoga.
Really? There's an actual trauma-informed yoga?
Yeah. And I would recommend Hala Kori. She's here in LA.
Hala Kori.
She teaches trauma-informed yoga.
No way.
Yoga for trauma.
And this was meant to be. I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah. She's a somatic therapist. And so this is one of her specialties and a yoga teacher. And, this is something that she's highly skilled at, and she works with me with Off the Mat Into the World, and so we've worked together side by side for years, and I know her work well. But there's other teachers all over the country that are recognizing,
mm-hmm.
it, again, yoga union, no separation between anything, no separation between the mind and body. The body experiences trauma, and so yoga allows you to discharge the trauma, but without bypass. It forces you to have to look at the trauma and say, what are you here to teach me? How is this meant for my highest good? But also feeling into the rage of the child. Like in my book, I had to, even though I don't mention Cece, she's all over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to give space for that overwhelm without thinking I should know better. And that we can hold the complexity of both. And so trauma-informed yoga lets you do that. So
I love that. I learned so much. I have so many other questions that we didn't get to. So we'll have to have a part two at some point. But I wonder, do you have a resource for people where you can suggest yoga teachers across the country for them?
I don't. On offthematintotheworld.org, we have a faculty of people who are doing different kinds of yoga on the fringe like that. Like, for example, yoga and 12-step recovery, beyond duality, that really speaks to folks on the margins.
What's that?
Folks on the margins, those are people unlike us who have privileges because of the color of our skin, because of our socioeconomic status, because of our access to education and resources. Mm-hmm. So folks on the margins are, you know, often folks of color, transgender folk, folks of varying abilities, who don't have the same kind of access or privilege. And often they're excluded from the mainstream yoga community. They don't feel in that environment like their circumstances are being spoken to. And so we have a broad faculty of people who do online and in-person training to help and speak to some of the trauma, that the historical and generational and systemic trauma that lives in folks on the margins that don't live within us. And so we have a very broad research of resource of people who do trauma-informed yoga on there, on that particular website. So offthematintotheworld.org.
Perfect.
I would highly recommend. There's also Ashley Turner, who's also here in LA. She's a yoga and psyche. And she's also a priestess. She does very transformational work also, a shamanic work in her rooms. They're there. And I highly recommend working. It's mostly women, not all women, but it's mostly women that I know who hold this kind of like this shamanic space, but also understand the psyche, which is critical, has to be understood. So I would suggest checking out that website.
That's so cool. Yeah, we'll put it in the summary so that you guys can find someone near you and then obviously find you on tour wherever you are.
Well, they can find me through seancorn.com.
Awesome. Sean, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Every level.
There was one question.
Oh, yeah. We never.
Yeah. I forget. I mean, you kind of answered.
I forget my signature question every show. My one question that we have to ask every guest is, how are you getting better every day?
How am I getting better every day? Practice. Mm-hmm. My commitment to the practice. Being more okay with my vulnerability publicly, as well as privately within my family, being committed that unless I'm willing to walk into spaces where my own vulnerability is present, it doesn't give permission for others to do so. And so yoga, meditation, prayer, diet, sleep, therapy, play, these are the ways in which I ensure that I do better and am better. And my commitment to serving others and recognizing the privileges that I've been given and the resources that I have, both spiritually as well as practically, and that the only way to really truly make sense of this world is to be in relationship, and that's yoga. And so how I get better every day is by practicing yoga and being in relationship with others.
Because we're better together.
I just have one question that's been burning me. Reading this book and just hearing you talk gave me a big breakthrough, because I have one person who is so dear to me and has suffered through trauma, anxiety, not OCD, but depression and highly abused drugs and alcohol, and then got to a place in their life where I called it a miracle, because now he is thriving and so healthy and just perfect. But I think calling it a miracle is doing a massive disservice to the work he's done and the work you have done. So I'm just curious, what would be the one, just one step of advice for someone who's still dealing, has not recognized their trauma and wants to move forward?
One piece of advice. That's a tough one, because it's also individual how someone moves through their trauma. Of course, I want to say trust the process. I think what I feel more to do in this moment is to pray, because it's what I would hope that someone can do, to be in the mystery. And so I'm going to ask the listeners, if it's appropriate, close your eyes. If it's not appropriate and you're driving and listening to this, don't close your eyes, but just let yourself connect to the moment and take a deep breath in. Exhale it out. And then in this moment, calling in the God of your own unique understanding, be it your higher power, the creative consciousness, Mother Earth, or the Holy Mother herself, but to this grace we ask. May this moment be an opportunity for healing and awakening to occur, body, mind, and spirit. May I let go of everything that I think I know and instead be willing to step into that sacred world directly behind my eyes, letting go of human interpretation. May I embrace divine perception, which is infinite and limitless. We ask, may we transform our resistance into surrender. May we shift our fear into faith, and may faith be the quality of being that moves us forward breath by breath on our path. We ask for strength and resiliency. We ask for acceptance. We ask to trust the God within and the God within all, and to recognize that we are here to open to love. We ask, may there be peace within and beyond, and may we be in service to that peace in all that we do and say and create. Take another deep breath in. Exhale it out. And then open your eyes and take that moment to recognize that the moment we open ourselves to acknowledging the challenges that is of this life is the moment the portal expands and we have the opportunity to listen deeply to the truth that's already within, because the truth is already there. We just have to get out of our way. So anyone who's in trauma, is in the struggle, may you be blessed. Trust the process. Breathe deep. Know that you are guided. Recognize that there are resources available that can help support you in this evolutionary process. Know that you are not alone in this journey at all, and that you will one day, not today, but one day look back and you will be grateful for every experience as it was, as it had been, because had you not had those experiences as they were and are, you would not be the person that you're awakening to be, which is love. That would be the advice I would give.
Thank you. I love that. Wow. So true. Yeah. We're all on our journey.
Yeah.
And it's different for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it. All right, Steph. Whew. What have we learned?
Maria, I was on the verge of tears that entire episode.
Right?
It was like from the beginning of when you guys started talking to the end, I was just amazed with the breakthroughs and it's crazy to see in individual stories, it resonates with millions of people.
Yeah.
It was so special.
Yeah, she's really special. And I think like I could just cry with her all day. Because she just is like magical. She's got like a way to touch your soul and a way to explain things. And like I said, I feel like I understand yoga on a whole other level now. And I think everyone listening will too, like knowing that that discomfort is what you need to investigate. And even, you know, in our post discussion, she was so gracious in giving me more information about things to look into, like the Greek heritage and Greek women and their roles and, you know, even talking about how my mom wasn't able to really communicate when she lost her baby. And I've devoted my whole life to being a communicator. And there were so many breakthroughs she was giving me, even in the post discussion, that I feel really grateful for. And I just feel grateful for this book. So I highly, highly, highly recommend Sean Korn's book, Revolution of the Soul. It's a beautiful account of her transformation and her teachings. And
we'll get more into everything on our after show on our Patreon, which we love if you guys become patrons, because that's how we make this community and make us ad free for the actual podcast version. But I did have one review mm-hmm. I really want to read that was
yeah.
It was just a really cute review from Detroit 411. It said he met Maria at a tending bar, not exactly sure, but it says, and I got an earful of some of the most valuable business and life advice and wisdom. I didn't know it was her at first, but it didn't matter. She was just a smart, caring customer that wanted to help, all in as a fan now and want to get better together. Thanks, Maria. I love this one because it's like you are always doing the good work, and even not on the show. That's why I like this one in particular.
Thanks, Cam. Thank you. Well, you can buy Revolution of the Soul, Awaken to Love Through Raw Truth, Radical Healing, and Conscious Action anywhere books are sold and on Sean's website, seancorn.com. And please help us by rating, commenting, subscribing on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And join us on Patreon, like Steph said. We really want to make sure this show can be ad-free and we give extra episodes and such over there. And here's one new thing I'm going to throw at you. I forgot that Naveen had given us an extra Viome kit when he was here. And I've held on to it and I am going to give it away to a new Patreon, not a new Patreon subscriber, a Patreon subscriber. So, subscribe and we will look through all of our subscribers and pick somebody at random. Stephanie is in charge.
Yeah.
And you will get a Viome kit. If you don't know what Viome is, listen to the Viome episode with Naveen Jain. It's a microbiome test and I am obsessed with it. And it's, I don't know, I think like $150 little stool test kit.
Yeah, our viewers, which you hear at the beginning of this episode, get a discount, and that's at viome.com/together. But obviously, if you're a Patreon member,
you can get a free one. Yeah. Hey. So anyway, I'm excited to give you guys that. So make sure you guys subscribe, and Steph will pick somebody at random, and we will send that to you. In the meantime, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being on this journey with us. And follow us at Maria Menounos, at Sean Korn, at Steph Sabraw, at Stephen Lemieux Photo. And remember, oh yeah, Stephen's gone. Poor Stephen was sick today. He didn't get to enjoy this, but he'll have to listen to it.
Yep.
And remember, be nice people, make good choices, and be present. Hey, Heal Squad, we have been on quite the journey together, and we're hearing from so many of you just how much this show is helping you heal and get better, and it makes us feel so good. We love, love, love it, and we just ask that you don't keep it to yourself. Spread the message and share the show or your favorite episode with your friends, and if you want to help us even more, you can leave us a 5-star rating and a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and follow us on Instagram at Heal Squad. You can also DM us anytime because we love connecting with you, and finally, you can also join us on Patreon for our monthly live heal events with world-class healers and ad-free episodes exclusive only to Patreon and our Super Heal Squad for as little as $10 a month. So go to patreon.com/healsquad to join. Getting better isn't easy, friends, but as I say all the time, it's a whole lot easier if we can do it together. We love you all so much, and we love doing this thing called life with you.